And welcome back in Game Day SportsRadio.com. It's Monday morning blitz time, sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Over 1,000 locations nationwide. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. Boji Wood back with you, coming to you from the Game Day SportsRadio.com studios right south of Atlanta, Georgia. And as always on the Monday morning blitz, we bring in Mike Bernard from OTM Sports in Las Vegas. Mike, how are you doing on this Monday morning? I know you're traveling today.
Hey, Coach. Yeah, I'm traveling today. But it's actually nice and refreshing because Saturday and Sunday are long work days, and get a couple of days of R&R and get back to the grind for this weekend.
Want to remind everyone that this segment is also brought to you by State Farm Insurance, auto, home, life, property, and many other products to make your life go right. Call or visit your local State Farm agent to find out how State Farm can help you. In the Birmingham, Alabama market, contact Larry McIntosh at 205-663-3119, located at 2685 Pelham Parkway. Larry and his staff are ready to serve you and your family. Contact Larry today at 205-663-3119 and get State Farm on your team. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right. Well, Mike, before we talk about some college football from this past weekend, we've got Alan Doyle, former senior PGA Open champion, that's going to be on a little bit later in the show today to talk about Tiger's big victory right up the road here in Atlanta yesterday at the Tour Championship. Now, I heard, I think, just maybe one segment of a show that you were doing sometime last week about the Tour Championship, and I remember you mentioning Tiger, so this really not that big of a surprise to you, is it?
No, but I did not predict him to win the tournament, but what I was asked is, what are his chances? And I gave them two answers. Well, he's, as far as the public, he's one of the favorites as far as the betting favorite. Even at Augusta for the Masters, he was either the first or second betting choice because the public will bet Tiger even if he's not 100%. But after this performance, he's shown he's ready to start contending for the big ones, including the majors. That was his first win since 2013, and I believe he's back.
All right. Well, listen, now when you say he's back, now are you saying that Jack Nicklaus's major championship record could be in jeopardy again? Because back in 2010, I don't think there's a person who followed golf that didn't think that Tiger was going to catch Jack and surpass him. Do you think he's going to be able to do that? He needs, what, four more, right?
He needs four more to tie, and he hasn't won. I think it was the 08 U.S. Open when he won on a broken leg and beat Rocco Mediate. So that's been 10 years. So I must see it before I believe it, guy, but I think he'll at least contend. Once he gets one, if he gets one in the next year or in the next year or two, then I think he's got a chance, because we've seen Phil Mickelson and other golfers contend in majors. So hate to ride the fence on that one, but right now I would just have to say no until he wins one, but I think he's shown he's going to contend.
And I'm going to say this. I'm going to say age is not going to be a factor with Tiger Woods, because what's it been, 3 years ago when Tom Watson was in the hunt for the British Open, even in the fourth round, I think he was leading going into the final round of the British Open?
Oh, yeah, well into his 50s. And, you know, I think Augusta is obviously, he knows that place and loves that place, has such an affinity and has a great record there. I think that he could win one or two of those, and ironically, since he's gone to this more controlled swing, I think the U.S. Open's a good major for him.
All right, let's move on to college football, Mike. A weekend that was full of upsets.
It was. You just go down the list, and you had Virginia Tech, Coach. They were a four-touchdown favorite, right around 27, 28 points. They lost the game. And remember, we talked about the little brother aspect from Louisiana Tech and LSU. Good job by the Bulldogs, by the way. They covered that game. Well, you had the same situation here. Excuse me. You have Old Dominion playing Virginia Tech. Huge underdog. and they won the game outright. So they were getting 27, and they won the game by 14.
Bobby Wilder, the head coach there at ODU, came to ODU to start the program from Maine. Now, he had been coaching 18 years when he came to ODU, and outside of 1 year as a GA at Boston College, he had spent his entire career playing and coaching at the University of Maine. So he has built that program literally from the ground up. He was hired before they even owned a football. I think one thing that, again, people on the outside don't understand how this affects you, but I promise you it does. Louisiana Tech, they went into Death Valley in Baton Rouge. And so, you know, they were an away team, and you go in, and probably LSU is probably the nicest visitor's locker room that Louisiana Tech will be in all year. And I can tell you from experience, LSU's visitor's locker room is nothing to write home about, and most visitor's locker rooms aren't, trust me. But Virginia Tech, they did not host ODU. They did last year. But for some reason, Virginia Tech got wrapped into a contract that caused them to go play at ODU in a 20,000-seat stadium. Jacksonville State University has more seats than Old Dominion University. And so they go in there. It is basically a what you would consider a high school visitor's locker room. Virginia Tech is having to tape outside, and not just Virginia Tech, any team that goes into ODU, and that's common practice. You know, you're taping outside the locker room. It's not a very comfortable experience. And I'm going to say all that, but then I don't want to take anything away from the performance of ODU. Blake LaRussa, their backup quarterback, comes in the second series, goes 30 of 49, 495 yards, 4 touchdowns. Jeremy Cox ran wild for 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was running over these people. ODU was on a mission. And Mike, one last thing I want to throw out about this game. Everyone knows what a great defensive coordinator Bud Foster is. I mean, he's been at Virginia Tech since 1987, been the coordinator since probably 92-93. Well, 632 yards is what ODU got. That's the most yards ever given up by Bud Foster defense, and we're talking about years of playing the Florida States, the Clemsons, you know, Miami's,
Alabama twice,
Miami back in the heyday when they were really were the U. The most yards ever given up by Bud Foster defense this past Saturday at ODU.
Right, and well, two last points on that game, and we'll move on to the other upsets. Number one, Old Dominion, hey, look, it's not like they were a good Sun Belt team. They were struggling. They got thrashed by, I believe, Liberty in the opening game, but it's that little brother syndrome. And again, we talk about how Alabama and Auburn won't go play Troy. This is another example why you shouldn't.
But perfectly, yes, that's exactly right. Ask Missouri, ask Oklahoma State what it's like to go play in Troy, Alabama, and they'll both tell you, we ain't going back.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, the next upset coach is in the conference we cover the most, the SEC, Kentucky. They were a home dog. They were getting, at some point, they were getting 10 points, but closed around getting 9. And, coach, Mississippi State's run game was abysmal. 56 rushing yards. Kentucky ran for 229, and it wasn't close.
It wasn't. I thought that there was a possibility of a letdown by Kentucky after that big Florida win, but no. To me, that says that that coaching staff knows the pulse of that team, and you have a mature team, because it's real easy to let down after a big win. You know, Troy, after going to Lincoln, Nebraska, and upsetting the Cornhuskers, they battled those negative emotions and barely got out of La Monroe with a win.
They did, but remember, they were up 35-7 in that game and then just held on and then La Monroe scored the last 20 points. But no, that's right. And for Kentucky to come off, I believe it was the first time they had beaten Florida in 31 tries, that's a huge lift for that program, and you have to be careful. You have to be aware of the emotional letdown, and I saw nothing of the sort. They just ran all over Mississippi State, and that was a big surprise.
Benny Snell, Jr., running back for Kentucky, he may be the missing link to what this Kentucky team needs, because now they have established a great running game with Benny Snell. Okay, Texas 31, TCU 16.
Well, TCU outgained Texas, but they lost the game by the 15-point margin. And the reason, and we talk about it often, the three things we talk about most, turnover margin, stopping the run, and running the ball. Well, TCU was -4 in turnover margin, and you're not going to win games in versus Power 5 teams with a stat like that.
Sean Robinson, the TCU quarterback, I thought he played well against Ohio State. He was very careless with the football against Texas, and that cost the Horned Frogs.
It did, and Texas opened as a 2.5-point favorite in that game. The Sharps and the public bet TCU. TCU ended up a 3-point favorite, therefore another upset for Saturday. The next upset we'll look at, this turned some heads here, Coach. Purdue over Boston College. Boston College was favored by 6.5 points. Boston College was averaging nearly 600 yards per game and 50 points per game before traveling to Purdue. And in this game, they managed only 229 total yards and only 13 points.
Not to toot my own horn, but if you will remember, you know, both of us have said that Purdue was the best 0-3 team in the country. You know, but I told you, I told you last week that this Boilermaker team, it could easily be 3-0 going into this past week's game. Right now, they could easily be 4-0. They've lost in the last minute of games, and one or two plays, you know, has flipped the scoreboard. Rondale Moore, a freshman, an outstanding talent. The Boilermakers they've kept after it, even though they started out 0-3. They kept fighting. They stayed committed to the cause. I'm looking for the Boilermakers to get on a little run here. I'm not predicting they'll go undefeated the rest of the way by any stretch of the imagination, but come bowl time, the Boilermakers are going to be there.
Right, and between now and bowl time, they might have a say in who wins the East or who wins the West Division of the Big Ten. And they're certainly capable, and they showed it by, you know, thrashing a Boston College team that had blown out every other opponent thus far.
Mike, one game that nobody saw coming. Oklahoma needed overtime to get by Army 28-21.
Yeah, Oklahoma was a 31-point favorite, and Coach, Army runs the option, and Jeff Munkin brought the run game back, the option game back. Remember, a few years ago, they went to the passing game, and that just does not work for the service academies. They can't get the athletes to run a pro-style offense. They're back to the option game, and that creates havoc, even for top-rated teams like Oklahoma. And this was no fluke. Obviously, 31-point favorites, they don't play the entire game close and mano a mano and go to overtime. So Oklahoma should feel lucky they escaped with a win and not be too ashamed, really, in my opinion.
Oh, not at all. And we've talked all the time about how when you only face one option team a year, it can give you fits. And that's exactly what happened to Oklahoma. And, of course, hats off to the Army team. No matter the score, no matter who they play, you know you're going to get 100% from every one of those guys when they walk out on the field. But one thing that they do after the game, and they don't do it for any recognition or any fanfare or anything, but when they go on the road, that visitor's locker room is left as clean, if not cleaner, than they found it. The Oklahoma staff saw this, their custodial staff, saw this after the game, called in one of the assistant athletic directors in charge of game day operations and said, what's going on here? and they posted, Oklahoma posted a picture, and we're going to get that picture posted on our website too, GameDaySportsRadio.com, just to show you the character of that Army team after being in a obviously tough, very physical ball game with a very good Oklahoma team. Again, that locker room was spick and span, and again, that just speaks to the character of those young men.
It really does, and I'm glad things like that get pointed out, because, you know, so often all we hear about are the negatives and where kids and teams and programs have done wrong, so it is good that that gets pointed out.
All right, Mike, Notre Dame went to Wake Forest and had a quarterback change. Brandon Whitbush has struggled a little bit, just hasn't been as sharp as he could. Ian Book got the start. He goes 25 of 34, 325 yards, two touchdowns. I think he's in trench as the starter right now.
Yeah, I would say so after that performance. And for the second straight game, I mean, not to nominalize what he did, because he had a great game, but the thing that I look at that's more important, and he's a great running quarterback, is they've rushed for 240-plus yards for the second straight week, and I think that's what they need, because once you do that, either quarterback's going to find open receivers if you can run the ball.
Right, and I think, though, with Brandon Whitbush, you've got a problem, much like LSU has had in recent years. When you don't have a quarterback that can complete some passes and make the defense quit loading the box up on you, you're not going to run for yardage. And, again, since Book is in the game for the Irish, again, his passing has opened the running game up. And as you said, in addition to his two touchdown passes, he also ran for a touchdown down at Wake Forest. So, again, the Irish looks like that they found their guy at quarterback. You know, we'll find out over the next couple of weeks. Speaking of the Irish, last week Vandy goes to South Bend, and they really outplay the Irish in every way, shape, form, and fashion except on the scoreboard. And, Mike, I could tell it by watching the South Carolina game Saturday. Vanderbilt's players, they had no juice. They had nothing to give. Their tank was empty. They had left it all up in South Bend.
Yeah, I saw the same thing. They were emotionally drained. And, look, I don't come on here and make excuses, because I don't have a rooting interest other than the point spread and for our clients. But I saw the same thing, because Vanderbilt went up there. I don't know if they've ever gone to South Bend before, but that had to be a trip of a lifetime for everyone in that organization. And they go up there, they compete, they get to see all the history of Notre Dame, and then they come up just short of winning at Notre Dame, and then they come home. And that's not a slight to South Carolina, obviously. It's a top conference opponent, but their run game was shut down, and South Carolina ran it all over on them, 273 on the ground. But I saw the same thing. I just didn't see. I think they were emotionally drained.
All right, Mike, speaking of emotion, we talked earlier about the Troy-La Monroe game. Troy, again, big win at Nebraska. You're bound to have a little bit of a letdown. They go down to La Monroe, jump out to a big lead. They put it on cruise control. La Monroe makes the valiant effort, makes it close in the end. Same thing happens at LSU. LSU jumps out 24-0. They hit the cruise control button. Again, coming off a big win for them on the road at Auburn last week. La Tech, little brother, still going to fight back. They make it close. As a matter of fact, they cut it to 3 there in the second half before a touchdown drive put it away for LSU.
Yeah, Coach, and we talked about that on Inside the Numbers, about that angle. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, you want to find those spots. LSU opened a 23-point favorite. They were bet down to 18.5, but the Bulldogs got the job done. That was a good play for us. We needed that play. But, hey, look, and it wasn't a fluke. Louisiana Tech put up a lot of yards in that game, and I know that, but part of the reason for playing Louisiana Tech is that LSU – is coming off that emotional win, and they're just not going to have the same juice, as you call it, in this game.
Correct. And again, that just goes, you know, and that's across the board, and that's pretty much any level of college football. And you go back to the early 90s, I think it was, or mid-90s, I think it was 90, I think it was 94. Northwestern goes and they beat Notre Dame for the first time, almost like the Kentucky-Florida deal, for the first time in 30-something years. Northwestern had not beaten Notre Dame since Ara Parseghian was the coach at Northwestern. Gary Barnett, he takes the Wildcats over to South Bend. They win that game. Everyone is shocked. I was coaching in Chicago at the time. I can tell you everyone was shocked. And then the next week, Miami of Ohio, they come to Evanston to take on Northwestern. And Northwestern was flat as they could be. And Miami of Ohio pulls the upset. So that's been going on for quite some time. All right, let's go out west, Mike. Stanford and Oregon was a very good football game. When you look at this game, I mean, obviously, Stanford wins, and that's what you see. But, I mean, if you go into the nuts and bolts of this thing, it's 24-7. Replay reverses a touchdown for Oregon that would have put them up 31-7. On the very next play, they mishandle the snap. It's not a mishandled snap. The running back fumbles, and the Oregon gets back on it. The very next play, the center snaps it over the quarterback's head. He taps it. It's loose. Stanford picks it up, goes 90-plus yards for the defensive touchdown. So instead of leading 31-7, now it's 24-14, and, of course, Stanford comes back and wins it.
Yeah, Coach, and those are all exactly what happened. And you said it very well. Stanford was outgained by 126 yards, but they won the turnover margin by 3. But I really don't care about any of that. Okay, the bottom line is Oregon did not finish the game because they could have not taken a knee, but they could have gone into shotgun, run off seconds, and punted the ball inside of 15 or 20 seconds, and they didn't do it. We've seen Chris Peterson not know when to take a knee. We've seen countless other coaches at high-level programs. That is on the coaching staff. They could have run the clock down. Now, yeah, sure, Stanford could have had one Hail Mary from inside their 20. If they don't get, you know, of course, they could have blocked the punt or thrown an 80 or 90-yard touchdown pass to win, which is, you have to play the odds and percentages, and that loss for Oregon is on the staff.
Right, and again, that's an over, you know, it was an overtime loss. Now, Mike, I'm just going to tell you this, and I've actually seen, I don't know if I would have the actual guts to do this as a coach, but I've seen this. Is that there are when you're up by more than two, the quarterback, if there's 5 or 6 seconds, the quarterback gets back in punt formation, you snap it to him, and he turns around and takes off out the other end zone, and there's no way that you can catch him down there. And it's easy to run off 10, 12 seconds that way, because you got to remember, he's snapping it 15 to 17 yards, and the defense now has got to chase him. And, again, bottom line, just poor, poor clock management by Mario Cristobal.
It was, and hopefully he'll learn from it. I think Chris Peterson learned now when to take a knee, because, remember, in 2014, Oregon ended up getting in the playoff, and they might not have, because that not taking a knee by Chris Peterson allowed Oregon to play Arizona again. So,
yeah,
I'm not beating the guys up, but at this level, they got to know when to take a knee, and they got to learn how to end the game.
Well, Mike, this is what I'm going to say. These guys are making like, you know, $4, 5, 6, 7 million a year, okay? All they've got to do, listen, I'll do it for $100,000. I'll come to every one of your games. I will stand right by you, and I will say, Coach, time to take a knee. I mean, you know, again, $100,000, that's chump change to them. They can afford me.
Well, here's the thing. This is many years ago. Bob Stoops, Alabama went into Norman, and the game was close. I think Oklahoma was had a 6 or 7 or 8 point lead, and he had his quarterback take the snap, see where the defense pursuit was, go to the other side, move around, run off as much clock as possible. In college football, if the opponent, if the defensive team, the team that's down, they do not have a timeout, and you have first down as an offense with the lead, you can run off as much as 2 minutes and 22 seconds. Because remember, there's no two-minute warning to stop the clock. Mm-hmm. And Bob Stoops did that perfectly. Another coach that is a great at clock management is Jim Harbaugh. But Bob Stoops ran off 2:22 in four plays because Alabama was out of timeouts. And now, today, these coaches to be well beyond that, have evolved well past what they're doing now, and they don't even know when to take a knee. And they certainly, like you say, if you get a person that understands math in the press box, say, okay, coach, here's the situation. They have one timeout. We can run it down to X seconds. It's simple math, but I just don't think there's enough emphasis on it.
I agree with you. And there's a chart, and I think this chart's still floating out there of when to go for two and when not to go for two, which, to quite, in my personal opinion, that thing is garbage, because I don't think you even think about going for two until end of the fourth quarter. You don't even consider it until that point. But you could easily have a chart with saying, okay, there's this much time left. They have this many timeouts left. This is how many times that we can snap it and take a knee. But, again, we could do a whole show on that. Let's move on to Clemson and Georgia Tech. Mike, I'm just going to have to say this because I'm hearing a lot of the scuttlebutt here in Atlanta. A lot of people are scratching their heads with Paul Johnson right now, because for consecutive weeks against Pitt and now Clemson, that option has been pretty much just shut down.
Yeah, they had 203 total yards. Now, obviously, Clemson's defensive front may be the best in the game, and certainly a tough challenge, but that option usually produces more than 200 yards. Certainly, I think, from what I'm hearing, I think Paul Johnson's done.
It really seems like it, and a lot of it may just be due to the fact that for so long he has said, we need this, because his quote verbatim was, if you want me to compete with the Clemsons of the world, give me what Clemson has, which is I totally agree with him. That is a valid statement, no doubt about it. But Georgia Tech's not going to do it for any number of reasons. Number one, they're not like Clemson. They're landlocked. There's only so much you can do with the facilities at Georgia Tech. But even doing the things that he wants done, they really won't commit to him. Yeah, they upgraded the locker room this year. That locker room was almost 20-something years old. I think in the last 11 years, Alabama's been through four locker rooms now. So, you know, you're constantly having to keep up with the facilities arms race, so to speak. And I know Paul Johnson has been frustrated for a long time at Georgia Tech. They may just be going both – may just be going through the motions right now. And as you pointed out, Ted Roof leaving on the show last week, Ted Roof leaving, making basically a lateral move to North Carolina State, being a Tech grad, being there for the last 4 years, he may felt like, hey, I need to get away from the dumpster fire, so if the job opens up, I'll have a chance to come back. But bottom line, you know, this Clemson defense, as we know, is for real.
Oh, they are for real, and hey, look, they've got Trevor Lawrence back there slinging it. I think it's going to be the same situation, as the same suspects as last 4 years. Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma. There's no parity when it comes down to the four, and I'm not saying there should be. Their job is to get the best four. I think right now, certainly, Clemson is one of the best four teams. Of course, we're still early in the year. Back to Georgia Tech, coach, I think it's going to get much worse before it gets better, because remember, he's got the players down there that fit the option scheme. So whoever comes in, they're going to have to rebuild from scratch. I think it's going to, they're in for some lean times down there.
I can see that happening. I can. All right, Mike, we've got just a few more minutes with you here. I want to talk about the polls. The top 12 in the polls, they all won. However, Auburn won, but, I mean, not in my opinion, not very impressive over an Arkansas team that they're just not very good. Auburn won, but they still fell a spot in the polls down to number 10.
Well, they may have fallen a spot in the polls, but everyone that had a ticket on Auburn, they went to the window and they got paid. So that I didn't take anything. I think Auburn was coming off the tough loss. They did what they had to. That doesn't concern me at all about Auburn. One thing, if you look in the polls, number 13, 14, 15, and 17, they all lost. Virginia Tech, Mississippi State, Oklahoma State, and TCU.
The Louisville loss, that is the one that shocked me the most. Virginia just owned them. I did not watch all of that game, but I did watch a good bit of it. And I think I'm not saying that they're ready for the playoffs or anything like that, but Bronco Mendenhall, I think he's finally got those guys to buy in up in Virginia, got enough of his recruits in there that I think they're on the right track.
Oh, yeah. And take a look at their over-unders in their game. Take a look at their results. They're playing physical football. That's what he was all about at Brigham Young. And he's changed the culture there. Not that it was a bad culture before, but it was up and down. And, it varied from every two or three years. I think he's established something there. But, of course, he's got a lot of competition in that conference.
All right, Mike, looking at this week's schedule, of course, Ohio State number 4 taking on Penn State number 9. That's going to be the primetime ABC game, the whiteout game. It's going to be interesting. Stanford, Notre Dame kicking off in South Bend at the exact same time over on NBC. So we've got two top 10 matchups right there. One game that I'm very interested in is on the SEC Network, 7:30 p.m., South Carolina goes to, and listen to me, number 17-ranked Kentucky. The Wildcats 4-0 for the first time in a long, long time. I'm interested in that game. I think that's going to be a pretty physical game. Outside of those, are there any other games that worth mentioning?
Well, those are the three marquee games I was looking at. I can't get my screen to come up right now, to be honest with you. I know that's not great radio, but I was going to look at the odds page where we're tied into looking at the odds from all the different casinos, and it's not loading right now, of course. But, no, there's going to be plenty of games to look at. Good for Kentucky being rated. You know my thoughts on the polls. LSU goes from 25-5, and then if they lose two games, they'll be out of the polls. Mm-hmm. So those are just polls, as they're referred to. But it's good for Kentucky. They need that. And I'm a believer. You've told me for a while now that Mark Stoops is the guy that can get it done, and I think he's showing it.
Tennessee and Georgia. Could this be a – remember, Jeremy Pruitt was defensive coordinator at Georgia just a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. Obviously there's turmoil in Knoxville right now. Let's not kid ourselves. He tries to put a player in the game. The player says, I ain't going in. He sends him to the locker room. Jeremy Pruitt has – I wonder if he realized going into this – just how hard of a rebuilding program this was going to be.
Well, two thoughts on that. Even if he did, if it were me, I would still go and take the money. secondly, a lot of people say, kids like that, if they have the attitude, you just need to throw them away. Okay, yeah, I understand that in theory. Charlie Strong did that at Texas. And he was never able to really build his brand, build his program, because he inherited players that didn't fit his philosophy, didn't fit, you know, what he thought was acceptable behavior. And so he got rid of a lot of players. Mm-hmm. And so it's not an easy call, and I think it's certainly an uphill battle for, you know, Pruitt.
Well, after losing to Florida as badly as they did Saturday, I think we're going to find out a lot about the true character of what his squad is when they go to Georgia. I think Georgia's going to beat them, but I want to see Tennessee go in between the hedges and fight. All right, Mike, now, this is the last game I'm going to mention, but this is, again, not a ranked, you know, Mississippi State still ranked 23rd after losing to Kentucky. But Dan Mullen returns to Starkville, Florida and Mississippi State, 6 p.m. on ESPN. Do you think that Davis Wade Stadium's going to be rocking about 6 o'clock on Saturday over in Starkville?
Absolutely. And not quite as much if State would have been comes in undefeated, but I think that has nothing to do with this. That's going to be an interesting game, certainly worth watching. And, you know, State's playing well until that Kentucky game, but I don't think people understand how capable Kentucky is. So that could be a very good game. State's a 7.5-point favorite, by the way, so on the early line.
All right, Mike, listen, we appreciate you being with us this morning on the Monday Morning Blitz, sponsored by Firehouse Subs with over 1,000 locations nationwide. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. Mike, we're going to have you back on the show tomorrow morning after tonight's Monday night game between the Steelers and the Bucks. We're going to go ahead and recap all the this past weekend's NFL action. So that's going to be great. It's kind of getting you on double time early in the week. I kind of like that.
Oh, yeah, I enjoy it. And Coach, one thing, I know we'll go over it tomorrow, but remember, when the point spread talked to us on when we did the show last week, Atlanta, the point spread was 4, then it was 3, then it was 2, and they lost the game. So when the point spread, to all the listeners, when the point spread talks to you, you better pay attention.
No doubt about that. All right, Mike Bernard from OTM Sports out in Las Vegas. We'll take a quick break right here on the Monday Morning Blitz and be back on GameDaySportsRadio.com.
No cloudy morning. Won't you hear what I say?